Welcome. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper.
And I'm Carolyn Nelson.
And tonight we're going to continue into your education about money. Something you've been dealing with all your life and know absolutely nothing about. Sheeple. What is inflation? Calvin Coolidge said inflation is repudiation. And I know a lot of you are going to scamper to your dictionaries to find out what repudiation means, and if you don't, you're never going to know. The League of Nations made this declaration. Inflation is the one form of taxation which even the weakest government can enforce when it can enforce nothing else. Inflation, ladies and gentlemen, is any increase in the economy's supply of currency or money substitute not consisting of an equal increase in the stock of gold or silver money. It can also be an increase in bookkeeping money, in other words, money that does not exist, which is issued or loaned in the form of credit. Many credit cards extend to you buying privileges when actually there is no money to back up those buying privileges. They depend upon you to pay your bill with interest in order to be able to pay the stores from which you purchase your goods. And we'll get into that kind of a system on another program. You see, inflation is not higher prices any more than a brain tumor is a migraine. Those of you who believe that the inflation in the 70s and the early 80s was set off by the increased price of a barrel of oil aren't playing with a full deck of cards. In fact, you don't have any cards in your hand at all. In fact, you belong on a couch in a psychiatrist's office because you're the easiest to lead around by the nose. Price inflation is the symptom of a currency devaluation, just as a migraine is a symptom of a brain tumor. Let's say the total money supply are in Economist Talk, the M1. The M1, many of you have been hearing that bandied about on the news and on CNN for years and have never bothered to even find out what it means. Now, bear in mind that I'm not talking to all of you. Some of you do know what I'm talking about. But I can assure you, you make up less than 0.01% of the entire population of this country. Let's say the total money supply is $100, which can purchase 100 gallons of gasoline. Whether it can or can't at this time makes no difference. We're using this as an example. And let's say that this society is made up of 100 people exactly, each with $1. Then, all of a sudden, the government printing press increases or inflates the total supply of currency by 10%, while the supply of gas stays the same. The M1, our total money supply, our currency supply, is $110. So 10% more currency chases the same amount of gasoline. Now remember, folks, the only purpose of a money substitute is to facilitate market transactions. Currency is made to be spent. At least real gold or silver money has true usefulness and doesn't have to be traded, whereas currency is not and never was a useful commodity. So people suddenly have 10% more currency in their wallets. 10% more of something which has no other utility but exchangeability. Are those people just going to store that extra currency and never spend it? Of course not. You know that, don't you? It will be spent in a very unique process. And I might add, very quickly, as all of you out there well know, just by looking at the total amount of your savings compared to the total amount of money you've earned over the years. Right, sheeple? Everybody will rush out and try to exchange their 10% surplus of currency for goods because all of a sudden they think they're rich. They have more than they've ever had before, so they've got to spend it. Because remember, money is not wealth. It purchases wealth. So to feel wealthy, you must be able to have the things that money can buy. Just having the money does not make you feel wealthy, does not give you wealth. And this is why this usually takes place. If you hear a dog barking in the background, that's Sugar Bear performing his patrol duties around the perimeter of the grounds of the studio. No one ever gets over the fence and lives. Let's assume, for simplicity's sake, that gasoline is the only available good. And let's say that John goes to the garage and tries to buy a gallon of gas for the historical price of $1. Brown overhears him and offers $1.04. Well, John counters with $1.08. Brown relents to paying $1.10, a price which John can match but not beat. Obviously, the garage will no longer sell gas at $1 per gallon, since everybody can, and this is the key, and will pay $1.10. Prices are bid upwards just like an auction. If during the so-called energy crisis, when they claimed that there was a great oil shortage around the world, and that was a big, total deception, a lie, a manipulation, if everyone refused to pay the higher prices and just stayed home, there would have been no higher prices, sheeple. None at all. But to make sure that you fell into the deception, they cranked out money on the printing presses and made it available, threw it upon the economy, made credit easy to get, and loaned money to anyone who walked into any lending institution for several years. The consequence was that you're now paying $120,000 for a home that used to cost $25,000 and was originally built and sold for $16,000. Sheeple, Most of you are not people by any means. You are sheeple. And if it makes you angry, that just means the shoe fits you better than anyone else. Whatever the market can and will pay becomes the new price. Now, instead of gas being $1 per gallon, it's $1.10 per gallon. Gasoline didn't go up in value. Currency went down in value. And that's where you all make your mistake. So, well, what's the big deal? I can just hear some of you say, well, what's the big deal? So what? The same 100 people still got their gallon of gas just as before. Practically speaking, nothing changed. This is true only for one reason. Everybody got their inflationary 10% windfall at the same time. In the real world, this never happens because inflation is never some natural random phenomenon. Inflation is never accidental, but is always consciously perpetrated. That means intentionally brought about by central bankers who know exactly what they are doing. Now take a look at what you made and what you could buy with what you made in 1970. Take a look at what you make now and what you can buy with what you make. Take a look at the fact that most women were in the home with their children in 1970. And take a look at the fact now that most women are working now simply because they have to, not because they want to, but because inflation took them out of the home, put the children, the occupationally orphaned children, in government-controlled daycare centers where they are learning how to live in the New World Order, while mommy and daddy, because of their stupidity, are working their butts off to try to keep a little of what they made in their life. Never mind getting something else to put on top of it. You see, only the government, only the wealthy, only the banks benefit from inflation. Differing weights and differing measures, both of them are abominable to the Lord. Proverbs 20, verse 10. Differing weights and differing measures, both of them are abominable to the Lord. If the government inflates the M1 by 10%, do you for a moment believe that it will simply send 10 cents to all 100 people, much less at the same time? Do you really think that if inflation goes up by 10%, that you're going to get an automatic 10% increase in your paycheck? If you do, you are probably one of those that they released from the mental institutions a few years back. If government did that, it would receive utterly no benefit from inflating the currency supply in the first place. Rather, the government spends that new $10 itself. Now the outcome is quite different. Who must make up what the government spends? Why, you do, of course. You do. The government buys 10 gallons of gas with its $10. Since the people have not received any of this $10, as in the previous example, they still have only $1 and cannot afford to outbid the government. At this point, the situation looks like this. The government has 10 gallons of gas. The garage has 90 gallons of gas, which is the remaining supply, and 100 people have $1 each. You get the message? You see, the sheeple are unaware of the government's currency supply inflation and gasoline purchase. Therefore, they do not realize that their total $100 now chasing only 90 gallons of gasoline. They will soon suspect that something has changed when their $1 will now buy only 0.9 gallons instead of a full gallon. You see, the dollar per gallon ratio has found a new equilibrium or price at $1.11 per gallon. Through this slick process, the government has robbed everybody of 1/10 of a gallon without the use of thugs or burglars. It's so slick that the sheeple rarely, if ever, catch on, and when they do, it takes someone like me to tell them. They never catch on and talk about inflation as if it was like the weather. Know this, dear sheeple. If you control the currency supply, then you control the economy. And it really is that simple. If you want to take a class of people and render them helpless before the elite, a series of inflationary periods can completely destroy a middle class and render them the slaves of the wealthy, of the rich. And that is what is happening. And I don't have to prove that to you. You can prove it to yourself just by looking around. Look back in history a few years and look at yourself now. Look at your bank account. Look at your salary. Look at what you can buy now compared to what it was. And remember that the dollar decreases in value every year. This doesn't stop, you see. Because every time they print a new dollar and don't take a dollar out of circulation, the value of all the money in circulation decreases. Decreases. In a debt economy, new money must be created all the time, or else no one could ever find the money to pay off their debts, and the great theft of this nation would be discovered. Not just this nation, but all the nations of the world that exist upon a debt economy using fiat or paper counterfeit currency with no backing whatsoever and debased coinage with little, if any, actual gold or silver content. Take a coin out of your pocket, turn it on its edge, and look at the copper. But you always take it out and you look at it and it looks silver. So you sheeple buy it. You buy the deception. Because if it looks like it's silver, it's okay. If they had just minted copper coins, you would have been upset, you stupid fools. But since it looks like it's silver, you didn't get upset, did you? Made no difference to you. If it looks like silver, it must be silver. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. The whole point of an honest, stable gold money supply is to ensure that relative scarcity, demand, and production efficiency of goods and services are accurately represented through their actual market prices. Prices, ladies and gentlemen, are information. Any type of elastic currency renders such accurate, honest pricing impossible. Government benefits most from inflation because it gets to spend the newly printed currency first and buy at yesterday's prices. Now, obviously, if a society had only one tangible good, then there would be no need for money or currency. In our example, the garage also has $10 for the 10 gallons sold to the government. What could the garage do with the $10? Buy gasoline from itself? No, folks, the garage would need somebody else with whom to trade its $10. Therefore, a society must have many different goods and services available. You see, in actual practice, that $10 would be spent mostly on wages, directly and indirectly, as wages are, as you know, the principal cost of everything. And who gets wages? Why, people get wages. When government spends its out-of-thin-air currency, it finds its way into the hands of people who trade it with others. But here's the important thing. Some people get the currency first or earlier, and others get it later or last, like a game of musical chairs. It's the slow guy who's left standing. The inflationary process is not as abrupt, but it does work the same way. A modern economy is very complex, and its participants are all very intricately related. When the government spends magico presto currency, it takes about 18 months to filter through the economy. It goes from top to bottom in a very, very slow spiraling fashion, losing value, or what's called purchasing power, along the way. Dr. Ron Paul wrote in the Ron Paul Money Book, quote, "Whoever gets the new money first benefits the most, but the favored industry becomes dependent on new injections of government credit and therefore forms a powerful special interest lobby to argue its viewpoint in Washington. Thus does inflation encourage the breakdown of society into warring factions. The more the government inflates and spends, the greater the pressure from the top and the greater its velocity through the economy." In effect, 1923 Weimar Germany, regardless, dear listeners, of the rate of inflation, inflation is still theft. And the inflation that's taken place in this country alone accounts for the greatest heist, the greatest theft, the greatest robbery that has ever taken place in the history of the world. And you still don't even know you've been robbed, or how, or who did it. Again, from the Ron Paul Money Book, Dr. Ron Paul said, quote, "Inflation destroys the incentive to save, especially when there are government ceilings on interest, as with savings accounts. Our tax system, taxing illusionary income, our illegal tax system worsens this, and we can expect to see a smaller amount saved by Americans. In fact, if statistics are true, Americans save less than any other people in the world at this time. Inflation steals from those who still believe in thrift and robs pensions and retirement funds. The only way you can benefit from inflation is to spend your money quickly, first, before anyone else gets stuck with it. While the prices are beginning to rise, not afterwards, if you save your money during an inflationary period, you lose it all. You lose. Yet most Americans still think that that's the thing to do. When prices are rising, we know we're not going to be able to afford to buy anything pretty soon, so we're going to save our money. Besides, inflationists don't have the dignity or courage to rob us face to face. They must hide in Washington, D.C. and trick the common wage earner through fancy statistics and verbiage. John Maynard Keynes, and he would know, said this, quote, "By a continuing process of inflation, governments can confiscate secretly and unobserved an important part of the wealth of their citizens. As the inflation proceeds and the real value of the currency fluctuates wildly from month to month, all permanent relationships between debtors and creditors, which form the ultimate foundation of a free market or capitalism, become so utterly disordered as to become meaningless, and the process of wealth getting degenerates into a gamble and a lottery." Lenin was certainly right. There is no subtler, no surer means of overturning the existing basis of society than to debauch the currency. The process engages all the hidden forces of economic law on the side of destruction and does it in a manner which not one man in a million is able to diagnose. Are you learning something, sheeple? If you're an inflationary government, and what government isn't, because all governments tend to collect power and take power and control away from the people and hoard it for themselves until they absolutely reach the ultimate pinnacle where they are the owners of the people. Then the trick is to maintain control of the addiction and not let it overwhelm the economy. You see, if they just let inflation run rampant, it would lead very quickly to revolution. So they control it, and they just steal your wealth and your sustenance and your assets little by little until pretty soon the people have nothing with which to oppose the wealthy. and their children can never attend the same schools and thus can never challenge the ruling elite. You realize that you are a non-producing parasite, if you are the government, and are careful not to kill off your generous, unaware host. You bite gently and withdraw modestly, or else the dog will wise up to you and start scratching. However, governments have never been historically completely smart. Those in government are greedy power seekers by definition, and the situation is like hiring speed freaks to run the pharmacy. Or to paraphrase Lord Acton, quote, drugs addict and absolute drugs addict absolutely, unquote. Substitute drugs with power, which is a drug. However, once those in government get a taste of the inflation drug, addiction is assured. William E. Simon, in A Time for Action, said this, quote, inflation works like a drug, requiring bigger doses to achieve the desired effect as the system adjusts to it. A little bit of inflation, like a little bit of an addictive drug, is impossible. Our inflation record over the past 20 years shows this effect clearly. From 1960 through 1964, the average rate was 1.5%. From 1964 to 1969, it was 3.5%. Notice the dividing line. It was the Kennedy assassination. From 1970 to 1974, 5.8%. And from 1975 to 1979, 7.1%. And from 1980 to 82, we have been well into the double-digit regions, compounding on top of what has gone before, unquote. Congress has indebted us to trillions. Trillions. Everybody hails Ronald Reagan as the great communicator, the great president. More money was spent by government during the Reagan administration than during the entire history of the United States of America put together. Ronald Reagan laid the groundwork to bring the bankruptcy of the nation closer to you in reality than you ever dreamed could happen. You see, the Reagan administration and Congress enjoyed the tune, but we are ordered to pay the piper, and can we afford the bill? Of course not. The money was created out of thin air and never existed to begin with, and we have to pay back the interest on top of that, which was never, ever created either. You see, they just cranked out fiat, counterfeit, Federal Reserve notes, or didn't even print any notes at all, just made it available in the form of credit. You see, when they do that, they just make a bookkeeping entry. Create it out of thin air. Write a check and give it to the person who borrowed the money. Electronic funds are transferred, and nobody ever sees, feels, smells, touches, or hears the crisp crinkle of a real dollar bill. Don't go away. I'll be right back after this very short pause. Ladies and gentlemen, you can listen to everyone else on shortwave, AM, FM, or on television if you want to, telling you what you're supposed to believe about money if you want to. The only place you're going to hear the truth is right here on the Hour of the Time. You see, everybody else is promising you that if you do this or that or invest in this or that, you're going to become very wealthy. And you're going to see increases of 1,000% over a year or two or five. You're being promised the moon. And I guarantee you, you're going to get the contents of the bag in your vacuum cleaner. You know why you can believe the hour of the time? Because this show makes no profit whatsoever. Our goal is to wake you, empower you, to save freedom. We advise you to invest in certain commodities to protect what you have, not make profits. We don't fill your head full of pipe dreams, but we are telling you that the longer you hold on to paper, worthless, counterfeit fiat currency, the more you're going to lose of what you've ever had. We finally settled on a sponsor who would treat our listeners with this concept in mind. If you want to invest with the concept that you're going to make a fortune or derive some great profit, they'll help you with that. But they understand the particular needs of the listeners of the hour of the time. It's to protect yourself against what's surely to come. Our sponsor, Swiss America Trading. They have a buyback policy, which you can get from them in writing. Try getting any kind of a buyback policy from any of these other people in writing. Try getting every single item and word and nuance of your contract revealed to you from anyone else, like you can at Swiss America Trading. Don't believe me? Call them. Thank them for sponsoring the Hour of the Time. Mention my name, William Cooper, and ask for the free newsletters and free information that you need to have to face what's coming. You see, the purpose of this program is to educate. Most of you are sleeping, ignorant, apathetic, and yes, even stupid. You need information. My people will suffer for lack of knowledge. It's in your Bible. Look it up. Call 1-800-289-2646. And remember, not one single penny of your transaction and not one single penny of any money from Swiss America Trading ever, ever goes into my pocket. Not one single red cent. Look around at your family. If you have not taken steps to protect your financial future, to make sure that you don't lose what little you already have, then you must call them. You must call someone. If you don't call Swiss America Trading, call someone else. Many of you have never really felt real money in your hands. This is your chance. Call Swiss America Trading. 1-800-289-2646. Get some real money in your hands. When the economy falls, you'll be one of the ones dictating the market in a back alley somewhere, not on your knees begging for a loaf of bread. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You know how you procrastinate. Do it now. 1-800-289-2646. You'll be glad that you did. Adam Smith wrote a book which was published in 1776 called The Wealth of Nations. And as he said, when national debts have once accumulated to a certain degree, there is scarce, I believe, a single instance of their having been fairly and completely paid without depreciated currency. The liberation of the public revenue, if it has even been brought about at all, has always been brought about by a bankruptcy, sometimes by an avowed one, but always by a real one, though frequently by a pretended payment, or in other words, money that was created out of thin air. Robert A. Heinlein, in his book The Expanded Universe, said, quote, "Our national debt will never be paid. We are beyond the point of no return. Inflation will continue and get worse, and the elderly on fixed incomes and the young adults trying to start families will continue to bear the brunt. Every congressman, every senator knows precisely what causes inflation, but can't or won't support the drastic reforms to stop it," which basically calls for the repeal of the 1913 Federal Reserve Act and separation of state and economics, because it could and probably would cost him his job. "I have no solution and only one piece of advice: buy a wheelbarrow," unquote. I also have been telling you that our national debt will never be paid. And in my book, I wrote the reason why congressmen will not stand up and bite the bullet and do what is required, because you will not stand behind him, because it means that you must also bite the bullet, and you cannot and will not do that. You would scream for his blood. One good example is base closings. You know we need to close military bases and decrease spending. You know that. Every one of you know it. Every one of you have been crying for it for years. But just not the military base in your town. Isn't that correct, sheeple? Yes, we need to close bases, but not the base in my town. You see, you haven't got the guts nor the intelligence to do what it takes, or to accept Congress doing what it takes. And the congressmen know it. Therefore, they will not stand with you, because they know with you they will lose. So they stand with your enemy. Because with your enemy, they at least have the illusion that they will win, not realizing that in the end, they're the same as you are, and will be the same slaves in the same slavery that you will be, chained to a computer, a slavery to a system of debt in a cashless one-world totalitarian state, which is coming just as sure as I live and breathe. And many of you are helping it along, screaming for your free medical care under the Clinton health plan, your free medical care. Oh, you foolish sheeple. Don't you understand why you need shepherds? Why you must be seared and led to the slaughter? Now that you have grasped, if you have grasped, an idea of the general mess we're in, let me explain how some very powerful and connected men behind the scenes put us there. It all happened between the period 1800 to 1913. Paper currency circulating as a gold money substitute is not as good as gold, but only as good as its issuer's integrity. In other words, throughout history, some paper currency has been issued claiming that there is gold backing it, when in fact there is not. As Ed Howe put it, "No man's credit is as good as his money. Only gold is as good as gold." When currency is accepted in lieu of money, the holder has merely a legal claim to gold or silver money, just as a check is merely a legal claim to cash. You see, if you took it to redeem the gold, and there was no gold, your currency is worth nothing. Until the currency is redeemed for money, the holder has nothing of intrinsic value. He only has a piece of paper that promises wishful thinking might be fulfilled. As long as the issuer's promises are kept, as long as currency is redeemable for gold, as long as there's really gold in that vault, then there's no problem. But what if the promises are not kept? And if you understand human nature as I do, more often than not, it's never kept. You're trusting all these strangers to tell you the truth about money and to steer you straight in our economy, which you can see clearly going down the tubes when you can't even trust the members of your own family. You really take the cake. Let's say that Ann has a check from John Smith for $100. Ann owes Bob $100 and will pay him once she cashes John Smith's check. Bob replies, "Oh, I know John. His checks are as good as cash. Just endorse it over to me." So the check trades hands as a cash substitute. You do it every day, all of you. Since everybody knows how trustworthy John Smith is, everybody passes around his $100 check as cash. Nobody redeems it for cash. Why bother? It's as good as cash. So nobody wastes time going to John's bank. Meanwhile, John Smith notices that months have gone by without that $100 check clearing. There being larceny in his heart, he gets a brilliant idea. But before he gets this brilliant idea, understand that that $100 check has already committed several thousand dollars worth of business with no real money ever changing hands. But John gets this brilliant idea. "Why should I keep my account balance equal to the total of my outstanding checks, if some of my checks will not soon be cashed? And maybe they will never be cashed." Through experimentation, John calculates that for every $1,000 in circulating checks, about $300 will never be presented for cash. So he only has to have $700 on deposit. Or, get ready, sheeple, or a 70% reserve. The other $300 he spends instead. Free cash, something for nothing. Ha, whoopee! Now do you know where the Federal Reserve got the name reserve? Only understand this. John held 70% or $700 in reserve. The Federal Reserve holds nothing in reserve. Just the word reserve has fooled you all these years. And they spend it all instead. Free cash, something for nothing. Whoopee! You see, like a good chain letter, this works pretty well for a few months. Then rumors about the fraud surface and more people begin to actually redeem John's checks for cash. John frantically makes deposits. But the word is out. And all of a sudden, there's a run on his account. Now everybody is at his bank trying to cash their John Smith check. Well, since he already spent that money, that $300, he can't make up the shortfall, and 30% of the check holders suffer, and John Smith has to close his bank account. And this is exactly what the gold warehouses or banks did to their customers during the bank runs in the Depression years. You see, they took gold and silver coin and locked it in vaults and refused to allow it into the economy. Therefore, the banks did not have any gold or silver in their vaults when people came to redeem their gold and silver certificates. You see, depression means there is no money available. You can't get it. You can't pay a worker because there's no money to pay him with. And you're all being told by the Clinton administration, by Bill Clinton, one of the greatest liars who has ever lived on the face of this earth, that the Great Depression was caused by Americans unwilling to indulge in free trade. This was one of his explanations why we were supposed to accept NAFTA. Sheeple. The banksters, which is a homonym and synonym of gangsters, realized that since only a fraction of their paper coupons or currency were ever actually redeemed for their customers' warehouse gold or silver coin,
You see, they could lend out the surplus with impunity. The banksters had suffered a defeat with the establishment of an official gold or silver standard in 1789, but they still retained the privilege of issuing paper receipts called banknotes far in excess of any gold or silver they had in their vaults with which to redeem them. It's called reserve banking. Typically, bankers would issue more and more paper notes to maximize their interest or profits. It was a matter of delicate judgment as to how many notes one could issue before the public would become alarmed and demand their gold. And periodically, the more greedy members of the fraternity would issue to excess. Then there would be a run on that bank's gold, and it would not be able to pay, and it would collapse, and the bank would close its doors. The banksters call it fractional reserve banking, meaning that their reserves on hand are a fraction of what the trusting customers actually have on deposit. And today, it's only 10%, when you can actually validate by audit that that reserve exists. And I tell you, it does not. It exists as a bookkeeping entry. It's like a long-term parking garage lending out your surplus automobile. When you try to redeem the claim check for your car's gone. Somebody else is driving it. The banksters called it suspension of specie, or gold or silver coin payment. It's really the greatest heist, the greatest theft, the greatest robbery in the history of the world. You see, where John Smith would go to jail for fraud, the banksters are immune. Their government cronies step in and declare a bank holiday to lock out the crowds of depositors who merely want their property returned. And this is the true definition of organized crime. Today, ladies and gentlemen, for every $100 you deposit in your checking account, the bank loans out $90 of it, reaps the interest, and has the gall to charge you for the privilege. When enough customers demand their deposits simultaneously, the bank, having loaned out 90% of them, naturally finds itself with a liquidity problem. Banks used to call on the FDIC for help, but since that's now flat busted, they'll simply lock their doors on the angry mob as they did in 1991 Rhode Island. And folks, listen to me. The FDIC no longer insures individual accounts for $100,000. Don't believe me? Go check on it yourself. Thomas Jefferson was not kidding when he wrote this. Quote, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. Already the banksters have raised up an aristocracy that has set the government at defiance." Unquote. The power seekers, however, would seek to organize their racket even further. What they wanted was a central bank system run by themselves from which no banks could remain independent. Member banks would pool their fractional reserves together. Therefore, a run on one bank would be absorbed by the entire banking system, allowing them to make unheard-of profits on your money while you pay them for the privilege of doing it. Individual banks would at last be immune from runs. Murray N. Rothbard, in What Has Government Done to Our Money, said, "Illegal suspension of specie payment was too crude an instrument. Too sporadic, it could not be permanent, since few people would patronize banks that never paid their obligations. And what's more, it provided no means of government control over the banking system. What governments want, after all, is not simply inflation, but inflation completely controlled and directed by themselves. There must be no danger of the private independent banks running the show. And so a far subtler, smoother, more permanent method was devised and sold to the public as a hallmark of civilization itself. Central banking." Unquote. But private mentors and warehousers were a problem for governments throughout history, and particularly modern history. Governments have realized that the most essential step in gaining control over people is to establish monopolistic control of the money system. For the monetary system is the jugular vein of the power game. Karl Marx, you all heard of Karl Marx, didn't you? In the Communist Manifesto, made this very clear, stating that one of the most important aspects in achieving communist control was centralization of credit in the hands of the state by means of a national bank with state capital and an exclusive monopoly. He also stated that to bring the middle class, or destroy the bourgeoisie, as he called them, under the complete control of the state, that there must be implemented a graduated income tax, which is exactly what has happened here, only in this country. In this country, it was meant never to happen. A direct tax upon the people is forbidden by the Constitution. The Supreme Court declared that the income tax is, in fact, an excise tax and cannot be levied against an individual or their income. So why do you all pay it? Just how big of fools are you? How many times do you want to be fleeced? How soon would you like to be led to the slaughter? You see, you have shepherds who do take care of you to a certain extent. But of necessity, your shepherds will always fleece you, and they will always eventually lead you to the slaughter. And in many instances, they use the Judas goat to accomplish their ends. Until a government can eliminate private mentors and gold warehousers, it cannot use the money system to achieve the kind of control made possible through a monopoly. In this country, the history of achieving this monopoly followed the same creeping control pattern government has used in all the other areas of our lives. It took government nearly 75 years to take the next significant step, the enactment of the National Bank Act of 1863, which in effect outlawed its competition. It is very interesting to note here how the passage of time can be used effectively to make sheeple lose sight of what has taken place. You see, few of any of the citizens who saw government pass an arbitrary law in 1789 allowing it merely to compete in the money business were around to see it take monopolistic control of the entire system in the mid-1800s. Americans, just after the American Revolution, were distrustful of government. But by the middle of the next century, government involvement in many areas, including the money system, had come to be accepted as normal. It is important to note that even though the government outlawed its competition and took full control of the money system, it did not try to change the system itself for more than another half century. You see, they take control and destroy you little by little, bit by bit, generation by generation, and the most recent generation never knowing what went before, never learning from history, and now no one even reads anymore. They sit in front of the great, magnificent brainwashing machine, the most successful mind control device ever invented, the television set, and don't even read books anymore. The term dollar continued to mean 1/20th of an ounce of gold, and the United States remained on a fairly strict gold standard until 1914, and we will continue tomorrow night. Good night, sheeple. Please wake up, and God bless you all. If you would like to know what real money feels like, if you'd like to hold it in your hands,
if you'd like to once again have real gold and silver coins in your pocket. And it is the only way to stop the New World Order. If everyone would take their Federal Reserve notes and trade them in for real gold and silver coin and stop dealing with banks, stop accepting paper currency, we once again could be the arbiters of our own fate. Call Swiss America Trading right now, 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You know, and I know, that you won't do it tomorrow, so do it now.